honorable members, PG and your team, Commissioner and your team, you're welcome to the meeting. This is our continuation meeting we started on Tuesday. We are supposed to have on Tuesday, but because of plenary, we had to request to come today. And thank you very much for coming. So we are in your hands. You can introduce your team, Commissioner, and go straight into the presentation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. Let me, maybe first of all, apologize because I'm not feeling very well, so I will not be talking today. I will have to ask one of my colleagues to do the presentation, and hopefully I'll be able to respond to the questions, but I'm not feeling too well today. My name is Bongani Khumalo. I chair the Financial and Fiscal Commission. On my left is Mr. Harry Daoud. He is one of our program managers for budget. And on the right is Dr. Tembi Mshakala. She is a program manager for intergovernmental fiscal relations. And then we've got Veron next to Tembi. She's one of our research assistants. And Henry Exton, who is our parliamentary liaison officer. Chair, let me at this point hand over to you. Mr. Daoud, to actually take you through the presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, members of the committee. So this presentation has got five sections, and I will take us through the presentation. I will skip the introduction to the Financial and Fiscal Commission, as this is not the first time that we're presenting before the committee.
Sorry for the statement. Minister, welcome to our minister. Thank you.
Okay, so going on to the next section, which looks at the agriculture, forestry and fisheries sector within the context of the broader economy. What you see is that even though the agricultural sector contributes a small share to the total economy, since 1990 it's been less than 3%, what we can say is that the agricultural sector still plays a significant role in the economy of Africa. While the sector has lost linkages with the rest of the economy, which makes its contribution much larger than its overall size, and there are estimates of between 9 to 12% in terms of its overall size if you include those linkages as well. In 2015, what we've also seen is that the agriculture contributed approximately 5% to total exports, making it an important earner of the foreign exchange. The only thing to point out there is that most of our exports are in primary products and not in processed agricultural goods. And this is something which the department has highlighted in its annual performance plan and also to address that going forward. Now, when we compare improvement in the agricultural sector in Africa with other countries, what we find is that employment is actually lower than other comparable countries that have the same agricultural size. Now, with respect to fisheries, we find that it contributes more than 1% to GDP, but plays a significant role in local economies with strong fisheries sector. So, for example, in the Western Cape, the fisheries sector contributes 5% to the Western Cape economy. With respect to the forestry sector, it maintained a trade balance of 22.8 billion rand in 2014. And most of the investment in forestry is actually directed at rural provinces. And therefore, the forestry can play quite a significant role in stimulating rural development and contributing to the jobs in rural areas. Now, when we look at the agricultural performance or the sector as a whole, What we see is the agricultural sector is dualistic in nature, where 95% of all agricultural output are produced by the commercial sector and the rest by the emerging farmers. Now, commercial farmers have declined considerably and stand around 37,000 in 2014, and this is mainly due to consolidation of farmland. So the number of commercial farms have declined, but the size of the farmland has increased over time, and that is really to respond to the current economic situation and declining competitiveness of agriculture, farming or agricultural sector. The bulk of the emerging farmers, in other words, the ones that are producing the other 5% of agricultural output, are located within 27 priority districts, and it is largely in areas of Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and parts of Northwest as well. Now, when we look at the market definition for our agricultural products, what we find is that the bulk of our exports go towards the EU, Africa, as well as Asia, and 10% goes towards the United States. Now, Chairperson, moving on to look at how has employment been doing in this particular sector. We know that there's been a consistent long-term decline in employment in the agricultural sector from 1.8 million in 1962 to currently sitting at 869,000 in 2015. But this may be turning around if we look at the recent labor force survey, which showed net job creation in the agricultural sectors in all four quarters of 2015 compared to 2014 have actually increased. So when you look at the previous year and you compare to the previous year, what we see is that agricultural employment has actually increased. So this could point to a positive sign for the sector, in that the long-term decline could actually be turning around. However, we know that there's been a recent drought in South Africa, and this may reverse the particular short-term trend, and it will require active policy intervention to avoid anticipated job losses, especially in the commercial sector, which absorbs most of the employment in the agricultural sector. Now, already there is a noticeable impact of the drought on the economy. We've observed a contraction in the economy through the first three quarters of 2015 when we compare to 2013-14. But also, importantly as well, South Africa may become a significant importer of grains, where previously South Africa was an exporter of grains. It's estimated that we'll be importing 5 million tons of maize and 2 million tons of wheat between May 2016 and 2017. And this will cut a significant cut, and it's been predicted that it will roughly approximate 11.5 billion rand in this period. Plus, we have to look at the increased pressure that this puts on, especially in terms of the size and delivery of imports, due to constrained infrastructure capacity. Now, when we look at the food prices, what we see happening in 2015 in the table over here, the red bar indicates food inflation, the gray bar indicates your overall inflation rate for South Africa. In 2015, food inflation was lower than CPI inflation or overall inflation for the first time in probably the past 10-12 years in terms of what the data that we've got available there. However, the trend for 2016 suggests that this is likely not going to be the case, and there will likely to be upward pressure of food prices, largely because of the drought, one, but also because of exchange rate depreciation and the need to import more food items, as well as other policy updates, such as, for example, your increase in your fuel levy. Okay, moving on to the, looking at the National Development Plan, we know that the National Development Plan is our long-term plan for the economy. And what it says about the agricultural sector is that it regards the agricultural sector as quite a significant sector in terms of absorbing employment or absorbing unemployed individuals, largely because the agricultural sector is labor intensive in nature. So when we look at the targets, the NDP is estimating that 1 million jobs will be created in the agricultural sector, but also other sectors such as agro-processing and related sectors by 2030. Increased investments in technology as well as research and development to realize that food surplus with a third produced by small-scale farmers or households, and also finally to create security of care of communal farmers, especially among the middle. Now, Chairperson, we know that there's been a reduction in the growth of government expenditure in the 2016 budget, and also the economic outlook over the medium term is lower than anticipated. In fact, the estimates are around 0.2-0.3% for 2016 in South Africa. Now, this is likely to have an impact on the medium-term spending plans of the department, as well as its strategy to achieve the National Development Plan goals. What we are saying as a commission is that if we reduce costs of non-core expenditure and also improve spending efficiency, then the impact of spending pressures on program delivery will be lessened until the economy recovers. Chairperson, this is to provide the overview of the department. We know that the department consists of 6 main programs, and there are also 6 entities that report to the department or fall under the department's budget. Now, with respect to the mandate, the department focuses largely on value chains in the agriculture, forestry, fishery sectors, inputs production as well as consumption. We know that the provinces also play quite an important role in implementing agricultural function as well. So the national department and provinces work together in implementing this particular function in government. The department contributes to 3 outcomes. Outcome 4, which is decent employment. Outcome 7, which is comprehensive rural development and land reform. And also outcome 10, which is to enhance environmental assets and natural resources. Now, when we look at the department's budget, the main focus over the medium term will be on 4 or 3 main areas. One is to increase food security, 2, create decent jobs, and finally, to improve the sector's contribution to national GDP. And this is all in line with the National Development Plan. Now, moving on to looking at the department's spending as well as allocations over the MTF period. This particular slide basically looks at the previous 4 years' spending of the department, broken down by programs, and also compares that with the 2016 MTF projections of the department. And what we find is that over the 2016, the department's allocation or budget is increasing from 6.3 billion in 2016-17. To roughly about 7 billion rand in 2018-19. Now, when we take inflation into account, what that means is that the department's budget actually declined in real terms by 3.2% over the 2016-18 period. Now, aside from the decline in the growth of the allocations to forestry and the fishery programs continue over the 2016 period, despite increased attention that is being given, for example, to the aquaculture sector, especially since this has the potential to create jobs. And we know that the aquaculture sector was identified as part of Operation Pakistan in 2014. Also, priority programs such as your agricultural production, as well as food security, is also declining over the 2016 MTF period. Now, here in the slide, we're basically breaking down the department's programs by department's budget by programs to see how the department's resources are allocated across the various programs and where priorities is being attached. And what we find is that there are 2 programs, agricultural production and food security, that consumes the bulk of the department's resources. So So the blue bar indicates the spending, the average allocation of the between 2012, 13 to 15, 16, and the red bar allocates the share of allocation over the 2016 MTF period. So what we see happening is that over the 2016-17 MTF period, the proportion of allocation to forestry declined from 18% to 15%, and the department's allocation to food security increases from 26% to 30%. And these adjustments reflect the relative prioritization of these functions and speak to the medium-term priorities of the department. Now, moving on to looking at the spending and allocations according to the department's line items. In other words, how are the line items for the department changing over the MTF period and what has been happening in the previous 4 years? What we find happening is that the capital group reductions are particularly evident with respect to goods and services, which declines by 9.7% in real terms over the MTF period, transfers and subsidies, as well as payments for capital assets. So these are the main line items that we see have declined significantly over the MTF period. Compensation budget increases by 1.6% over the MTF period, although there have been the reductions of 159 million in 2017-18, as well as 253 million in 2018-19. Also, what is important to note is that there is an amount of 60 million rand from the cash grant that has been retained by the National Department, largely for beefing up the port over the monitoring, as well as providing support to provinces, specifically with respect to the agricultural funds. This just again shows the allocation of resources across the different line items, and just to emphasize here once again is that most of the resources are allocated to transfers and subsidies. So over the 2016-17 MTF period, 56% of the department's resources are being channeled to transfers and subsidies in the form of additional grants to provinces, as well as transfers to public entities. Moving on to looking at assessing the annual performance plan as requested by the committee, we looked at the APP and we tried to assess to what extent does the APP address some of the sector challenges. Now, what we found was that although the department mentions the major challenges that face the sector and stated up front, it is unclear what some of the strategies are that the department intends to implement to address those sector challenges and how those strategies are actually filtering into the strategic objectives and performance indicators of the department. So, for example, we know that one of the major challenges of the department of the sector is the lack of sufficient infrastructure. Yeah, and it's not very clear what exactly are the strategies to address that particular challenge and exactly how that fits into the LCP of the department. The department, as well as provinces, have taken a number of measures to address the drought problem in the country, both in terms of increasing allocation for disaster relief, but also at the same time other measures such as sending out advisories to farmers in terms of how to respond to the drought. But what is missing from the IAPB is really an assessment of whether the current implementation or the measures that have been taken is sufficient to address the crisis and whether there are any gaps that still need to be addressed. The Commission, of course, welcomes the department's initiative for thinking around climate-smart agriculture as a way of mitigating the impact of drought. And we know that implementing climate-smart agriculture means that we use less inputs, but we can achieve the same output or even a larger volume of output in the agricultural sector. Now, under the food security program, an important output is putting land under crop production. And we know that one of the main challenges is that there are large tracts of open land or unproductive land that is not being utilized. And this particular output is trying to address that by converting that into productive agriculture. But what seems missing is how will the department ensure that the cultivated land are in accordance with agreed upon standards. And when you look at the 2014-15 annual report, what we found was that there was very low compliance rate against the agreed upon standards in terms of meeting in terms of crop production. Now, moving on to an assessment of the performance information of the Department of ACP, what we found was the quality of the performance information contained in the APPs is of extremely poor quality and may pose significant oversight challenges, especially when it comes to assessing the in-year performance of the department as well as looking at the performance of the department towards the end of the year. And just to provide some examples of where there could be some improvement that one could identify. Certainly, annual targets are some indicators to not reconcile with the quarterly breakdown. So, for example, if you look at the operation particular projects indicator, in the annual column, you, for example, have five supporting of these projects in phase one. But when you look at quarterly breakdown, the total comes to 8. So there's a mismatch between your annual target as well as quarterly target, and which one is correct and how do you reconcile that. Some of the indicators are also fake, and may not be focusing on the area performance that should be measured. For example, there's one indicator that relates to the number of households that benefit from food production initiatives. And there's another indicator of the number of small older producers receiving support. Now, if you look at the second indicator, for example, it doesn't specify what type of support. So is it through advisory, is it through workshops, is it through extended services? What exactly is it that the department is providing, which should actually be measured, and which should actually measured in, and we should be quantified in the department's ADP. Some indicators are not, are also not according to the SMART principle, which may raise concerns in terms of how the department is going to report against it correctly in the reporting as well. So, for example, there are indicators that seek to stick the research agenda implemented and monitored, as well as resources developed. So, we're not sure what resources is being developed, how is it being developed, how much is being developed, and by when is it being developed. So those are the types of areas of clarity that is required in quite a few of these indicators. Also, the confusion, we pick up a confusion between an activity and what is a performance indicator. And many activity indicators, for example, sound like an indicator. In the sense that there's no real performance dimension that can be measured. For example, risk-based annual plan implemented or fraud prevention plan implemented. Now, all departments are required to implement a risk-based annual plan as well as a fraud prevention plan. So is the performance dimension 100% compliant with the risk-based annual plan or 100% compliant with fraud prevention plan? Is that the indicator? So it's not clear exactly what is being measured and what is the performance aspect that should actually be there that we should measure the department against. There's also the alignment between the National Development Plan and the department's APP is not explicit enough. So yes, the department does mention the National Development Plan, but it's very difficult to try and tie together the strategic objectives of the department on outputs as well as what is included in the National Development Plan. Now, Chairperson, moving on to the assessment of the conditional crops for the department. What we find, when we look at the spending performance of the grant between 2013 and 2014-15, in other words, in the previous three completed financial years, what we see is that spending performance has been varied. So while in Lima, let's say, for example, spent 86% of its allocation, CAF, for example, spent only 92% of its allocation. And when we look at the period of March 2015 to February 2016, so in other words, the past financial year, for the first 11 months of the 2015-16 financial year, and we compare that to the benchmark, national treasury benchmark, we find that the spending on all three conditional grants are significantly below the 91% benchmark. So we're not sure if that is because there are certain payments that will only come through at the end of the year, or if, for example, the spending is going to continue towards the end of the financial year. So those are perhaps areas that need to be asked of the department. Some of the main challenges that we know of with respect to the conditional grants include poor planning among the provinces. There are contractor challenges. There are late changes to the business plans as well as weak and inefficient procurement processes within the various agriculture provinces, provincial departments of agriculture. Now, when we move on to the spending allocations of the agricultural grants over the MTF, what we notice is that it's actually a decline in all three of the conditional grants, mainly as a result of underspending of these grants, as well as reallocating resources into other priority areas. For example, CAF is reduced by 150 million rand over the MTF period. Like we mentioned earlier, part of that reduction will stay with the national department, but not lost completely. That's largely because of improving the oversight function of the national department and also to provide it with additional skills to provide support to the provinces. Also, what we find is that an amount of 2.8 billion rand is reallocated to the FESTLALA from the infrastructure allocation of CAF. And this is largely to support farmers with production inputs. So the assessment is that farmers or emerging farmers require more support on the input side. This adjustment is a response to that reassessment of emerging needs of emerging farmers. That also intends to use allocations in CAF as well as labor and timber crops to assist in providing drought relief to farmers. We're not yet at the stage certain sure whether those allocations is going to be sufficient and whether they are also sufficient to address the problem. The provinces are also complementing this with their own allocations on the equitable sheet. Now, when we look at some of the entities that report to the Department of Agricultural Forestry and Fisheries, we see there that there are underspending on allocations received, specifically by the Agricultural Research Council, Marine Living Resources, as well as Sierra Farms. And we're not certain what the reason for the underspending are and whether they have taken any steps to actually assist these entities to address any underlying issues that they may be facing. And just finally, the Chief Minister, to reiterate what we've previously stated, I won't go into these concluding remarks. It basically summarizes what we've already commented on. But I just want to go on to the recommendations. We made a few recommendations in our submission of the 2015-16 Division of Revenue. There are some of the recommendations that government responds to, but there are other recommendations which may not have been aligned to the Division of Revenue, which we have made because they were quite critical for the sector, and that was part of the gesture to the Division of Revenue in 2015-16. I'm not sure if you want me to go through the recommendations or should I just leave it there. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, that was the presentation from the FFC. You are welcome to interact with the presentation. Honorable Spain, who can start?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I think my concern is basically, I would almost say, twofold, but it's the same thing. It's also on the drought. On your slide 9, if I can get to that, there is, at the bottom, you talk about the food inflation and the CPI, but then that last sentence, you say forecast suggests the outlook for 2016 is expected to put further upward pressure on food prices, and then you talk about the drought, the exchange rates, and other things like fuel and electricity. I wanted to find out if someone has done, if it's possible to do a kind of projection of what's going to happen if all of that is taken into effect. When we had the presentations by the Poultry Association, they spoke about, if I can remember correctly, I think it was 23 billion rand, just the impact of the gain coming into South Africa and the knock-on effect on the food industry with poultry and animal feed. So if you take all of that, you take the impact of the increase in fuel, electricity and the rest, is there some kind of a projection that could be made? I'm really extremely concerned. Every day we get more and more and more reports on price increase, and I think Jefferson, later when we have the National Agricultural Market Council, it's something that we also need to put to them. So I just wanted to know who can, you know, and whose role is that? Obviously someone in government must be concerned about this, and it needs to fit in some way. Then my second question linked to that is the one that you said that the department at an annual report is silent on the assessment of the current crisis and whether any gaps still need to be addressed. Myself, I'm extremely concerned about that. I said to the department previously, it's as if your programs are just following on. Everything is normal, but it is not normal. So, and maybe it's also linked to the fact that you said that in certain cases the department is unclear between an activity and a performance indicator. For me, I thought performance indicators would have moved or shifted to reflect that money or programs must be changed in order for the department to assist with the current crisis. Because you mentioned things that was done like sending out notices and holding meetings. That's not enough. I don't think our agricultural sector will survive with that. We need some kind of a shift towards focusing more on real support on the ground. And I'm concerned that by the time we shift, it's going to be too late. We get reports already of animals dying massively. We're going to go into winter now. If we want to see dead animals, wait until the winter starts. So that's my concern. I really think we need to throw, you know, everything we can towards moving some kind of support to make sure that we, by next year, sit with a core lot of farmers that can take our agriculture forward. By the time we move and shift, might be too late for many of our farmers. And then on your recommendations, I think one of the things that's also important that needs to be focused is this thing of the kind of the last slide, where it says government should clarify the legislative mandate and responsibility of municipalities in relation to food security. And the reason again why I'm mentioning it here today is this thing of food pricing and increases of food prices. The constitution gives government and local municipalities almost the job to ensure that if people are in crisis, they must be helped, and local municipalities is the first. I am getting a report already from provinces like Free State, where the drought is having a massive impact, that more and more people are coming steaming to municipalities, and sometimes the reverse is happening. People from cities are now steaming to municipalities and local areas where they think they will find food, and there is nothing. So, if the Department of Agriculture's main focus is on food security, I know there's this cluster thing of government where the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation is in charge now of food security, but I think what I'm lacking is from the Department of Agriculture itself putting some kind of a plan in place to ensure that food security are upheld in a very, very difficult year. So I would like to get your comments on, I don't know if it's your role, but whose role it is to ensure that we look at a department's annual plan in a difficult year, but no changes were made. I don't know if I make myself clear. I'm concerned that it's, as you know, if everything's just continuing like normal, and it's not. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation.
Thank you very much, just for clarity, just for clarity's sake, and maybe to be educated on this one. On page 7, the light, the top slide, I talk to spending an MTF budget by program. We see that. Page 7. Oh, I'm looking at you now. Sorry. Just to have more clarity on this one. Here it says there's an annual average decline of 3.2% annually over the NDF. I just want to check in terms of the food department and other sister departments that generally contributes to the growth, to the economic growth in the country. What does all this say? I'm not sure about other departments, the decline in other departments, but this one is 3.2. Because we deal with all other departments. And I'm talking about the economic cluster. Because I think that the cluster that talks to the economic development. Yes, all of them do, but that's the cluster. What does it say to the economic development in the country, or economic development of the country, if there is such? That's one. The other one was on page 4, on the employment, agricultural employment. Nobody here we can blame, because drought is a natural phenomenon of disaster, and it has an effect on the decline in unemployment. So reducing the gains that was made at this department or the Department of Agriculture. And so that means a plan from the Department of Agriculture now on how to ensure that, developing a plan to ensure that it doesn't have much effect in terms of employment. That question surely can be a question for the Department of Agriculture to have a plan. But as I'm throwing it, you may share your views in terms of it. Thank you very much.
Okay,
the interest only non-performance, the new allocation, particularly in terms of the program, priority program that you mentioned. If you can clarify that, whether is it contributing to the decline in, of the budget. The second question is on the but I see in your recommendation there is no commitment or response from government on the issue of getting municipalities the role, defining the role of municipality or food security. The Department of Planning and Monitoring with some entities, they've done the study which shows that there is a deficit of $2 billion in terms of this program. And you look even with the allocation for agriculture in terms of the agriculture, they had to relocate money from CASP and illiberalism to fund that program, which if you look at in terms of what agriculture is supposed to do, you could see that there is a lot of injustices that have actually happened there in terms of the allocation. Because if you look at the illiberalism grant, what is the initial intention was to encourage even the subsistence farmers. So now you have to develop a smallholder farmer. So there is a lot of confusion, and I'm not sure in your coming recommendation, can't you look at particularly because even the study shows that in terms of production, there is a lot of decline from which, in my own view, the role that agriculture is supposed to play. And look at the funding that's supposed to go into the production. It's very little. So I'm not sure in terms whether in your coming your assessment, can you make that assessment that will actually make a recommendation to Treasury to reconsider this? Because if you look at the allocation, particularly on food security, generally in the government, you don't see it responding, but you find that it's increasing the insecurity that has been there for people. The last one is on the rural development and the agriculture, which has been a problem for quite some time. And I'm very happy that the response from Treasury is their priority. But the question would be how long the process should go in clarifying or relocating the money relocating or clarifying their role and responsibility. So, because for me, it goes to 20 years now, and this has been a problem that is in race. Just to check in your own view, what is it that together with you can do to make sure that the process has been speed up? Those are my questions. Honorable Mandela and Honorable Traba and Honorable Kenny.
Thank you, sir. Let me take this opportunity, like my colleague, to welcome the presentation, the Honorable Chair from the Fiscal and Financial and Fiscal Commission. If Honorable Chair, through you, I can be assisted in just gaining clarity on this. On the slide
number 6 at GADA, which says agricultural performance. It talks there on the consolidation of commercial farms, which has been declining, spending around 37,000 in 2014 of farm units. And I'd like to understand, Honorable Chair, if the consolidation leads to a negative impact on production, what would be their finding on that? Because I would assume that once you consolidate, you are strengthening commercial farms and you are ensuring effective and efficient production. But what would be their findings on that? Also on the bullet point, there it talks to market destinations for agricultural products, which EU is seemingly accounting for 32% of sharing exports. And I'd like to know, is that dictated by EU being a preferred buyer, or is it a failure on our part to strengthen relations with our neighboring countries in the African continent and ensuring that we are able to export to them rather than the extent of the EU? And also, Honorable Chair, on slide number 10, it talks to the National Development Plan, which envisages that agriculture sector is one of the key levels for job creation and ensuring food security in South Africa. It further goes on to identify certain objectives, and I would like to focus on the first objective being to create 1 million jobs in agriculture, agro-processing and related sectors by 2030. Now, in their own assessment as FSC has the department been working towards achieving these targets, and if so, how much have they been able to achieve towards this target in this fiscal? Is it 10 jobs, 100 jobs, 1,000 jobs? If they can assist us with estimates and around that, so we can be able to better measure if the department is really working towards attaining these goals. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I also echo the sentiment of my colleagues in appreciating the report. Just a few. One is on the issue of the land that lies fallow is not being used. I wonder if there would be any concrete recommendation there. What should be done, you know, to ensure that this land is being used, because it is contributing to this problem of food security. And secondly, I would also like to understand, or to be clear on this part, what is meant by this contractor challenge, so that if it's something that can be addressed, so it should. Whether it is by the contractors or it is the way the department handles contractors. And also another one would be on the implication of this poor information, performance information. This is the area which usually brings a problem when it is picked up by the Auditor General. When we are fortunate, it hasn't been. But now when it comes up, it means to me what would be the implication, and therefore what should be done to ensure that this poor performance information is being corrected. Now the last one is on this one of the municipality, the involvement of municipalities. And it's clear here that the recommendation was submitted, and government response doesn't seem to have assisted. It says then to me that there should be another form of there should be a recommendation of something has to be done, because I know it for a fact that the fact that the division of revenue makes it explicit that municipalities must not get involved in farming. In this case, it was irrespective of whether they are farmers, they are beneficiaries, or the people in the community, in the municipalities say our priorities are cattle production. But it will be told that your core business is this and this and not that. But it seems you have identified this and the recommendation has come. But it doesn't seem to me that the response is satisfying, and therefore, but next on this recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kate. Yes, I wanted to ask on that slide where it speaks about the increases or decrease in the different programs. I see that the spending on administration has increased, I think, from 11% to 12%. I can remember correctly. I don't see that slide now. 14, slide 14. No. What is the main reason for that? Is it the change in the salary structure of increase, or is it something else? And then something that I've been wondering about, maybe you can answer me. In the budget this year, there was a slide, and I think it comes from StatsSA, that talks about sector multipliers. And it says for agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, for every rand, the multiplier effect is 1.70 for agriculture. So every rand you put into agriculture, it contributes 1.7 rand to the economy. That's how, or the change the economy was on. So definitely the opposite must be also true. But what is more important here, and I think the thing of the effect on jobs, it's 4.9. For every rand, or million rand, you can increase the job. So if you can, and you mentioned in your presentation that agriculture didn't really say what they need, but I know that all the agriculture got together and they said they need at least 12 billion rand. So if you look at that, you already can make a projection on the losses that just the grain industry says they will have. I think we can make that up. What is going to happen to the economy? What is going to happen to job losses? So that's why I said earlier, I can't understand, Chair, that we sit and discuss the annual report of a department that doesn't reflect that. When these sums are available, that you can actually make those little summaries beforehand. So I would like to know if there's a study done, maybe, in other countries that shows if you increase the contribution to your agriculture budget, if that multiplier effect it could be seen. Because we are discussing a sector that the budget is decreased every year. Is that not maybe also why the contribution to GDP is decreasing? Is that linked there directly or not? So we keep on talking about agriculture's contribution to the GDP is going downwards. But is that not maybe the link? And has that been done? Who's supposed to do that? And have you looked at similar studies maybe in other countries? If you increase your contribution to your agricultural sector and your budget, will that not increase your contribution to GDP? Thank you, Chin.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Member. I think let me start off by saying our submission that will be tabling for the 2017 Division of Revenue, which will be tabling at the end of May, answers quite a number of the questions that you are actually asking now. So I don't want to tell you what we are recommending at this particular point in time to respond to some of the questions, because some of the questions definitely do require a significant amount of research, and we have actually done that kind of research. We just finalized, in fact, tomorrow we're meeting as a commission to take the final decisions on the recommendations that we will be making. The submission focus is using the intergovernmental fiscal relations instrument in order to deal with the challenges of the rural economy in line with the prescriptions of the National Development Plan. So we've dealt with a whole range of departments, because it's when you talk about the multiplier effect of agriculture, it's not just agriculture that you'll be looking at. You're looking at a whole range of other industries that are linked to the agricultural industry. So for example, a transport and transportation network would count in your calculation of those numbers. So it's not just looking at it in isolation. If you want to look at the contribution to economic growth and the contribution to employment and employment creation. So that is an issue that we will be addressing in our submission. The issue of the market, why Europe is 32%, it's a historical pattern. But the challenge is the exposure of the sector to what actually happens in the European Union market. We are aware, basically, that those economies at some point were heavily affected by the global economic crisis, and therefore the demand for some of these exports would have gone down, and that will have an impact on our agricultural sector. So obviously, I think the more diversified you become in terms of your export markets, the better. You can't concentrate on one. So the skewness is not that bad, but the exposure is actually the one that is important. The issue on the decline over the MTF of the budget for DAF in real terms, we need to emphasize that it's a decline in real terms. So if you account for inflation, that is a decline. But if we look at what is happening to the broader economy, the whole range of departments, there's a number that have experienced that. So when we look at this rate, I think it's important to look at them in the context of the fiscal consolidation exercise that is currently underway, and the sectors that have to be cushioned against the impact of that fiscal consolidation. I mean, we know that when the minister tables the budget, and also the MCBBS, one of the key messages was that we cannot consolidate our budget or our fiscal on the back of the poor. So your social sector departments are relatively less impacted upon. Obviously, there is a point where you have to start thinking about the balance. And I think in our submission that we made on the fiscal framework, we highlight that point, that first of all, I think it's important, and it's good that the department is here. It is very important that when funds are allocated for any particular purpose, they are actually spent. Because what they tend to do when you are in a situation like this, where you have a fiscal constraint, what tends to happen is that you look at programs that are performing or underperforming. And those that are underperforming tend to be the most vulnerable. So it's important that that principle, elemental principle, is actually understood, that so long as you demonstrate that the performance on your allocations is not very good, you are always exposed to those types of cuts when they are cuts that need to be made. And I think in terms of the plan for the department, it does indicate that they are aware of those types of issues. And one would be expecting that those will be addressed as a, because otherwise you get exposed to this decline. You get exposed. I think the issue of performance indicators I will leave for Khalid to respond to that. Honorable Mandela, the issue of the farm consolidation and impact on production, I think we haven't actually done an in-depth assessment, but I think a stylized fact around this. When you consolidate farms, depending on the level of capitalization that you have, you might actually lose jobs. So it is a question of the inputs that you combine when you consolidate. So the impact on productivity, obviously, people would say that the more mechanized you are, the more productive you will become. But obviously, the social impact might mean otherwise, because there are people that might actually lose their jobs. So those are the kind of challenges that one will have to be looking at in that respect. And I think in the work that we have done, there is some assessment of those types of probably not as in-depth as your question would require. I think my voice is running away. Ahmed, Alex, can I just ask you to the rest of the question?
Okay, so just to respond to some of the other outstanding comments, as the chair indicated, quite a number of these questions are being looked at and will be addressed now, a forthcoming position of the review submission, where we've actually made recommendations on some of these issues that we've raised. But just to touch on some of the other issues that relate to things that people have asked clarity on. There was a question about whether the decline of priority programs is linked to decline to the budget. Now, if we look at this particular slide over here, this particular slide basically shows us what is happening to the allocations of the 2016-17 MTF period, and also the average real growth rate over the period. And we can see there that both agricultural production as well as food security is also declining. And we know when we refer to declining, we're talking about in real terms. It's declining in real terms as well. So yes, that is also contributing to the decline in the budget of the department. There's a question about the issue of land that is fallow. What can be done to utilize it? From the APP, it's quite clear that the department is aware of this as a major issue. In fact, one of the key outputs of the department is actually to put into operation 1 million hectares of production on fallow land, and so far approximately 400,000 hectares have been achieved. And over the next MTF period, the department is estimating that the other 600,000 hectares will be targeted for implementation. So I think the key question for us over here is not so much around the number of hectares that are being cultivated, but the standards against which those hectares are cultivated. Are they sustainable, etc., etc.? I think that is really the quality dimension that we need to look at and combine with the quantity dimension as well to give us the full picture. What is meant by contractor challenges and technical challenges? Well, at the provincial level, there are a number of issues that relate to contractor challenges.
Most of it is around contact management. So how do you actually manage a contractor once you purchase or once you ask them to implement certain outputs? And what we tend to find is quite often, because of poor contract management, you end up with a situation where at the end of the contract, what the supplier or the contractor provides is not what you asked for, or the quality is not according to what you've expected, or we perhaps may not have identified the correct contractor. So halfway through the project, the contractor can't finalize the project. So those are some of the contractor challenges that are there and need to be addressed. With respect to the performance information, what can be done to address the poor performance information? The National Commission has certain guidelines on what constitutes a smart performance indicator. Usually it goes through a process of consultation and assessment. And it's important that each performance indicator needs to be looked at with respect to the overall implementation plan of the department and whether those performance indicators actually comply with those standards that National Vision has. So it's really something of a management issue which I think should be asked to the department in terms of how they're going to address that. Then there was a question about the administration increasing from 11% to 12%, and this is largely because, unlike all of the other programs, what you see in this particular graph is that administration is declining, like all of the other programs, but it's declining at a lower rate than all the other programs. So when you look at the resources that are being allocated across the department, what that simply means is that now more resources are being allocated to administration compared to the other programs. It doesn't mean that administration is getting more, it just means that the reduction in administration has been less than the other programs. And that's why the allocation is higher. I think that's all the questions. Thank you.
Let me follow up another question. That first question of mine of the forecast of the price increase compared to the electricity fuel, all of that, the increase that is, if we can have some idea on that, I think it's important that you know where does that fall? Who looks at things like that? Obviously, it's a very technical thing.
There are research units that monitor the price of food. I know that the Bosch University has got a research unit that monitors food prices, and I think it would be useful just to look at what they're currently doing and to find out if they're doing such a system, because I think it's quite an important point that you are raising, because it has an impact on the overall economy, but also the type of intervention that we need to implement as a department in order to address the escalating food crisis, and how do we buffer the poor, which usually feels the burden the largest.
The any reason why Treasury is not implementing zero budgeting, they are still continuing on incremental budgeting? Because I feel that like some of the departments, the agriculture, will continue to suffer because at some point they were not performing. And even if you have management, you have people in, then because of this cost, the incremental, you continue to receive. If they cut that other year, there is no way that they assess at some point to say, now the department is performing the, you have to reconsider putting back the initial or looking at the needs of the department and start to fund. I've asked the department and the in one of the meetings on their conditional grant. That, you know, your equitable share has got to be the formula that you follow. But we conditional grant to the provinces. It will depend on which provinces actually submitted the business plan earlier on. And, but as the year continues, there is no that assessment in terms of the work that has been done in the province. It will then be incremental. You end up having the province that in terms of equitable share would not qualify to get more forever because it's going, it's incremental. Just to get the reason why are we consistent in continue with this incremental budget.
I really have no answer for that, but you know, you probably would have been aware from your previous life that there was a process at some point to reform the whole budget process, and that process hit a snag at some point. So the conversations that we were having at that particular point revolved around what you are actually asking now. And unfortunately, I cannot give you an answer as to what happened, because I know that the people that were driving that process are no longer at the treasury, for one. Whether it's still on the program for the treasury is something that probably the treasury officials would be able to better respond to that. I cannot give you a straight answer as to why it's continuing in the direction that they are.
Honorable members, that is Papa.
Let me have my last one on the drought. When we have this challenge of the drought, I think when the government assists, it goes to assist in production. And I think, unfortunately, the assistance is limited to production, not consumption. The most likelihood with the producers is that the maize that was produced before the drought is likely to be sold at a price of after drought, as if it was produced during this drought. And at the same time, when there is assistance on the producers, it doesn't seem that there is a possibility that they are made to understand that because we have assisted you, we have subsidized you, you have to consider and not just sell prices based on that there is drought, and have now the consumer seeing the most suffer, and them while they've been cushioned by the department. I wonder whether there can't be anything that solves that situation. What then to say?
Just lastly, Chair, I hope there will be a positive contribution coming from your office to increase the budget of this department. But I also think linked to that is something that you mentioned, and it's something that you're discussing here, is the fact that it doesn't help to increase the budget, but it's not properly spent. You have to see the effect or the outcome of that. And the frustrations that we are sitting with as a portfolio to, you know, year on year sit with, as you say, the not proper measurable outcomes. Our frustration sometimes is that when you ask questions, you're getting moving targets. And the issue of a baseline to start off with, I always say to the department, you know, compared to what, if we assist 10,000 more older farmers, for instance, compared to what? What is the thinking of your office in ensuring that we have proper, I would almost say, a statistics on agriculture? Because, you know, we're not even sure how many households are involved in agriculture, because that is, I don't ask the questions almost like that. Sometimes we're having discussions on what is the a definition of a small-scale farmer? What is the definition of, you know, so I think we need to also look at that, because we can't look at movement in a department if we don't have proper baselines. And I just like a last comment. So that when we do the planning, we can actually see that there is a definite change to lives of people. And as the chair said, our concern is when we got the presentation that it doesn't look like at this stage it's helping poor people that doesn't have access to food, really. If you look at the site, it went down and then it started going up again. So we need to get to some kind of a agreement of this is the baseline that we're all working from, so that we can measure, because that's part of the problem. It's not measurable.
Okay, so just to respond to those two questions, the concern that the member raised is quite is noted. I think it's of course a situation that you would not want to happen, where producers exploit the situation by charging for produce that has been produced before the drought at current prices. Now, I'm not sure exactly what can be done. One would obviously hope that there are oversight or bodies that monitor this type of thing, consumer bodies or that monitor this type of thing, and they are able to identify who are some of the producers that would actually be doing this. And I think that one would obviously need stringent monitoring at the grassroots level, especially with respect to your basic food items, because that's generally what most of your poor household consume, and will have a bigger impact on poor households if the escalation of prices is because of making more profits rather than being sensitive to the current situation that we're in. The other issue about proper statistics, I agree with you that there's definitely a need to have a baseline set of statistics for the sector. And I know that the health sector, for example, has something like that. I'm not sure how one would go about it, but it definitely would require engagement with different stakeholders. So your National Department of Agriculture, DPE, would need to be part of that discussion. SLT would need to be part of that discussion. Your provinces need to be part of that discussion, just to find out what are some of the key indicators that the sector actually need to monitor from an implementation point of view, and who can actually, or how that information can actually be collected.
Thank you very much, Chair, and your team. It's a pleasure to have you here. Please go and ask my question. Why are we consistently on incremental budget? Where is the reform? Because it's very important to, for the development. If we want to achieve our development, developmental plan, national development plan objectives, they should be better for. Because if we move with the same pace, I'm telling you, we'll not actually achieve this. So please, the finance committee, please talk about the reform. Thank you very much. You are this, and hope you get well. And I've started to realize every now when we invite you, either you have a flu or you have some sickness. I don't know what's the problem. I hope. No, thank you very much. And then we have the minister. You can come back to sit here. 5 minutes stress break. Honorable Paul, you're welcome. Yeah, you can go for break. Huh? Oh.
I welcome you.
Have a seat. Oh, you're welcome, mother. There was this other question whether where the sea next to my
Thank you.
DJ. You're welcome, DJ and the minister. DJ will introduce your team and as usual. And then the ministers can give us a political overview, and then from there you go into the group.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I have brought the various program managers plus one or two people from the planning. We have the financial officer, Mr. Stryo is here, Mr. Ndombela, the DDG for corporate services. I'm trying because I don't see the computer. Can I allow people to introduce themselves? My eyesight is not the best, so I don't see some of my people.
Thank you. Thank you, DG, and good morning to honorable members. I'm Gwena Komabi, and I'm here in my capacity as acting Director General for EDTM.
What is EDTM?
Private industry or more. Economic trade and
marketing. All right, I have my list. I'll go through this now. There is Mr. Joe Kobokwe, who is the DDG responsible for program planning, monitoring, and evaluation. There is Dr. Tao, who is the DDG responsible for forestry, natural resource management. Mr. Msomi, the GDDG for food security, agrarian reform. Sue Middleton, who is the chief director in fisheries, but he's standing in for the deputy director general, who is in the Eastern Cape preparing for the presidential visit there on the ocean economy. I have Ria. Ria, where are you? Ria is our chief internal audit executive, and I have also Dr. Songade, who is a director in veterinary services of Veterinary Public Health, Dr. Julian Jasser, who is acting for Mr. Ramaswamy as a acting deputy director general for agricultural production, health and safety. Mr. Ramaswamy is on a visit overseas with Elaine Alexander on one of our agreements with the Netherlands. Then we have Mimulotsi, who is in strategic planning, and Ms. Pike, who is the director of risk management. You underway? And Alicia Stevens, who is in the office of the director general, and Norma Mafan, who is our parliamentary coordinator. Eldam Chika, who is a CASP coordinator, a transferring officer. I don't know if I've missed any other person. Elda, where are you? Then from fisheries also we have Mr. Swafa, who is a acting chief director in marine resource management, and Justice Matsila, who is a acting chief director in research, fisheries research. And then there are staff from the ministry. I'm not sure if you want me to introduce them. No one in here. Thank you, sir.
We'll give the minister opportunity to make a political overview. Minister, you know, in previous meetings, Honorable Marie is not here. He was complaining about the DG on Fisher. Since we've confirmed him, confirmed her, she has never come to appear to the committee. So it must be visible to this committee.
Thanks, Harrison. That point is noted. And I can assure you, it is not out of disregard to the committee, but more to work pressures. As the president will be visiting PE on on ocean economy, they are the forward team that is going to make sure that all those projects are identified and created. On some other occasions, because there has been more work to deal with our international formation. She has been, but we'll take that into account that in the next committee meeting, she delegates maybe some of the work and present and the present in this team. In this financial year, our department has taken a decision that we'll make sure that we contribute towards job creation and growth. We will try to reduce the input costs, and one of those will be to engage, because the input costs in most instances are caused by the fact that most of the import costs are imported more than being produced internally. And we're in engagement with different organizations to make sure that we improve localized production or some of thereof. And we have engaged IDC so that we can be able to improve the branding of the products that are produced by the state but are sold raw, which makes it that when you buy fertilizers, and fertilizers are key into what is used, but fertilizers alone cannot assist because you need to do studies so that your economists are able to quantify and do soil analysis so that fertilizer will buy conforms to the type of soil you are having. Those are issues we are looking at. Monitoring of CASP and through using of agricultural graduates has to is something that we're going to focus on. And I think in the long run as a department, we need to revitalize or to improve the work of the land bank and make sure that it becomes part and of the family so that we're able to improve on areas of monitoring. And I think the recent discussions we have shown what are the gaps in that area. Provision of food and nutrition security policy has to be, and I think we've discussed as to whose role is it, and I think the members have what they have used. As a department, yesterday we had a discussion with the Minister of Development and Land Reform and agreed to have an Asian meeting to coordinate the available funding and make sure that we spend and we've got one pool from which to draw, because if we are to succeed, we need to make sure that we work more in a coordinated fashion. We need to implement our programs for locating the graduates who are not working, so some that they are placed in some of the projects that's in buffet, so that the expertise can be realized. And already, there is a number that has been taken on board. We believe that if we can use those graduates, allocate them according to their strengths and skills, we can be able to make sure that we create sustainability in all the projects we are running, and also enhance them with skills that are needed to make sure that they can be able to become future farmers. Pulling together the private sector, the president, a person, is driving a program that looks at stakeholder combat, in which we believe that already, Green South Africa has pledged that they are going to be more stronger in the Eastern Cape. Some of it where there's been good rains, and this is that part of the other maize producing areas are challenged by land being taken over by other activities. And the protection of agricultural land remains one of our core challenges. But also, I'm sure when we report back, we'll be able to give as to what that intends to be doing. we need to finalize of that allocation and program and implementation of the small-scale fisheries policy so that there's clarity and what role fisheries, small-scale fisheries can play in alleviating poverty in all the coastal provinces to ensure that international and local markets are open to smallholder farmers. And that is the work I think we need to do so that those smallholder farmers are not only encouraged to produce, but when they are produced, because one of the challenges is the storage capacity, especially those who produce maize. And maybe that through our discussions, Sotol seems to be amenable in producing some form of silos. They may not be in the form of silos as we know them, but the ability to take that maize, because when you produce maize without silos, you end up with all form of challenges. We need to make sure that the voices, the part of entities and those who tend to come and are here appointed so that they can play their role. We need to, and I'm sure that we can report and say that all the senior positions of DDGs have been filled by the department. But there are other areas that I think we need to make sure that we will have to deal with. We are working towards the filling of the post of the DG that has been outstanding for some time, and we understand the impact thereof, because if there is no head, sometimes you find that the programs are not driven properly. And the department, we are working towards the implementation of mitigation adaptation measures, because drought has given a lesson to say that we have to do things differently. We have to enhance and ensure that smart agriculture is not only predictive but interactive. If we are to succeed in producing, that includes increasing in new inventions of new cultivars that can withstand drought, and all those we believe we will as a department embark on. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Minister.
Chairperson, thank you, and the members. Firstly, let me indicate that we have distributed the APP presentation of the department before and the presentation of Marine Living Resources Fund. I have brought additional documents, and purely they were not necessarily the requirement, but I thought it would help to provide further details in some areas. They may not be needed, but I just brought them. I brought also the CASP. I know we're still going to do a full presentation on CASP to yourself, but I just thought that we present the APP, you probably, some of the questions would allude to issues that are contained in the CASP, and I brought the presentation, and if it pleases yourself, I may run through it also. But otherwise, it will just remain additional information for now until we come and present. In the additional information, we brought some information on the cooperatives, and normally those details are required on the training. We brought some information on the graduates programs. There are various components in the graduate program. We just referred to the graduates, but we'll see the various elements of the graduate program in one of the details that we've provided. I've also brought a slide on the studies that are being done on the smallholder farmers, because there's quite a number of studies that are running, and some of them would ultimately culminate in one comprehensive approach in supporting the smallholder farmers. And I just brought a slide to show those details. I will not necessarily present it unless required. So, and also I brought also a slide on some of the pipeline projects that have been discussed with the private sector that would have some impact, a reasonable impact, and I've just included that. They are not concluded, but I brought that up to give a sense, and I thought this additional information may be useful. It's not necessarily part of what is required today. I'm going to spend on the presentation. I will not run through the whole presentation. I'll probably spend more time on the session A
the section E of the presentation is largely the details of the APP. I will not do that. The Marine Living Resources Fund also forms part of in the departmental program, Program 6. I probably am going to start at Program 6. If needed, I'll do a few slides in Marine Living Resources Fund. But it has the details beyond what is in the containing department. Sure, I should also, I would want to say, no, we were just observers, but the remarks that have been made on the performance information, one should contextualize that, because it was very clear that the presenter has not looked at the technical indicator description. A number of things that he says that are not clear, they are clearly described, support what we mean it is in the technical indicator description. But I believe that because we will have an engagement with FFC at a later stage, we will clean up those issues. There's one area where he was very correct, is on the number of aquaculture projects, which is 8, but when break it down, it's not, well, it's actually shown as 5. It would have been 5 plus 3. 5 is 1, 3 is phase 2, and I think that 3 of phase 2 has been omitted, and he was very, very correct on that. But we will bring that correction. I'm going back to the presentation. The slide number 5, I'll talk to the slide so that I don't lose anybody. It's basically the compliance statement. On slide number 6, this APP is premised on the key government priorities that are related to the National Development Plan and the New Growth Path, and on a number of policies, the National Food and Nutrition Security Policy, the Agricultural Policy Action Plan, and other related policies. On page or slide, I'm going to skip 7 and 8 and spend a bit more time on slide number 9 on the situational analysis. As we implement our progress, we are aware that there is a lot of underutilized land in the communal areas, which remains a challenge that needs a lot of support, because the rural communities are the ones who bear the brunt of poverty and underdevelopment. We also doing the our progress in an environment where you have, because of a lot of movement both within the country and cross border, there's a movement of people and goods, particularly of biological nature, if it goes, may lead to higher risk that would require, that would expose the country to other biosecurity threats in terms of animal and plant diseases and pests, and therefore we would need to check that, and it would affect, of course, safety in terms of food and feed for animals. We also are aware of the growing food insecurity in the country, impacted by a number of things, the effect of climate change and variability, the declining investment in the sector, but also that particularly for the developing and new producers, market access remains one of those constraints that will have to be addressed over time. The sector also, the FFC has indicated, we have to diversify, not put our eggs in one bucket in terms of export destination, and diversify also not only the export destination, but also the commodities and the value-added products. Then the challenge of the growing smallholder sector, that has its own challenges, to make sure that it is a beneficial, profitable, so that you get the smallholder sector, which incidentally those are the more vulnerable people, bring them into a vibrant about poverty line, but also vibrant livelihoods. On the slide number 10, in terms of fisheries, we have limitations around the declining fish stocks due to depletion, and depletion that comes due to over-exploitation. And of course, course also because of illegal activities, but also the growing demand. The more participants you have, the more pressure you will put on those. Of course, we are then bringing in the coastal communities who have been excluded by implementing a small-scale fisheries policy. It's one of those policies that as we implement, because it's the first time, it will have its own teething problems, and we expect that. There's, of course, a decline in terms of forestry in the areas that have been planted. Those also have not been maintained to the best level. There's been shortage of timber products also. And we also are aware, as Minister has indicated, that the competitiveness in agriculture it gets affected by high and rising input costs of various nature. And, of course, the land use practices also, some of which are unsustainable, but also the remaining challenge of losing the land to other non-agricultural users. In terms of the slide number 11, the organizational environment, we operate in a concurrent phase, and this keeps coming, and that's the area we must manage well, and I will talk to that later. But also we need to make sure that we position our human resource capacity, including the youth, transforming the workplace, and of course addressing the challenges of the aging and ailing workforce, particularly in the remote area where the working conditions have to continually improve, but also some historical factors that come into play, and we have to make sure we improve our monitoring and planning. I'm going to skip the slide number 12 that deals with our planning processes to come to where we are in compliance. The next slide basically says there are four goals that we are implementing. Of course, goal number one is providing the leadership and the administrative support to make sure that the organization achieves. The goal number two, we would want to make sure that there is a profitable and safe production that will lead to increased market access. And goal number three deals with the food security initiatives by creating an enabling environment to make sure that we improve food availability. And goal number four is that the resources that we use, the natural resources that we use, are used in a sustainable manner. And I'm going to skip slide number 14 on the objectives. I'll skip slide number 15 and spend a bit of time on the next slide from slide number 16 on part of the 5 years what we'll be doing. Firstly, we will, under program two, make sure we promote animal production and products by monitoring the implementation of the animal and plant improvement schemes in those areas where we have prioritized. We will also address regulatory frameworks to reduce the risk of disease outbreaks, both the animal and plant, and we are implementing a number of programs in those areas. I think one important part of this is now the development and the implementation of the animal disease and management plan and the introduction of the compulsory community service for vets. That's one of our implementation to reduce the risk. And of course, ensuring the conservation of animal and plant genetic resources so that over time we have material to be able to produce, particularly of those resources that are unique to us. Slide number 17, we will implement during this period food national policy on food and nutrition security. We will improve our delivery capacity by enhancing our sector capacity policies that would be appropriate, and of course developing the graduates, expansionists, we will do that, and of course make sure that we develop and implement the comprehensive producer support policy. slide numbers 18, will improve market access and a number of things we will do. That includes the certification, the accreditation program for small holders to make sure that they are market ready. Ensure that the agro-processing entrepreneurs are capacitated according to the non-standard standards, implement the Agri-BE fund, but also not only implement it, one of the challenges is ensuring the enforcement regime in the Agri-BE. The development of the trade strategy and international relations strategy and the trade competitiveness development plan. And of course, the support to the cooperatives and of course, monitoring of the Agri-BE sector codes and the forestry sector codes. In terms of program number 5, on slide number 19, we will assure the conservation, the protection, the rehabilitation of the sustainable forest management. And a number of things that we'll do, some of those would include the replanting of temporary unplanted plantation areas. We will make sure that we create an environment of being able for the SMEs to operate by assisting them with the EIAs that will be required, and it will open their participation. The revitalization of the irrigation schemes within as part of what the National Development Plan had alluded to, we would continue to do that. And of course, the ensure that the framework for protecting and preserving the agricultural land is provided by completing the bill. And of course, restoring the various hectares of the land that are exposed to degradation, both in the forest land and the agricultural land. I think a very important at the stage where we are is to implement the climate change mitigation and adaptation plan. We have submitted our plan to DIA, who is the lead, and we much of what we're doing is to implement, and now as we're drought, it's even more important that we accelerate in those areas. Slide number 20, problem number 6. One of the things that we do would include creating an enabling environment by concluding and implementing the aquaculture bill, and of course providing support to the projects that have been identified in the plan that was developed under Operation Pakisa, the Oceans Economy, and of course develop and implement the framework for allocating the fishing rights and the small-scale fisheries policy, and ensure that we protect our resources by ensuring compliance and management of the fish stocks. On slide number 21, we show you the jobs that will be created where we as government are spending money directly. Now, this does not include the jobs that are created in the sector as a whole, but these are the jobs that are created on those resources that we are spending directly. And I've indicated there for forestry, the land care, the CASP, and Ilimalikima. The next slides, Chair, from slide number 23, those are the details in the program. And I don't know what your pleasure would be, but I would not go through those. And if you don't mind, I would move to the MLRF is there is need. But we have also attached the budget from site number 48 per program per indicator. What is it that you would spend? And we see that the program administration would take 17% of our budget. Program number 2 on slide 49, and this is where program number 2. This is where ARC would have been allocated also, but in addition, this is what we would spend per individual indicators. The next budget on page 50, food security and agrarian reform. Ordinarily, this is where also we allocate money for the conditional grant that's going to the provinces, and 55% of that. Slide number 51, this is a budget that goes to trade, promotion, market access, or under the branch called economic development. Perhaps what I should just indicate, say, whilst I'm on slide 51, you will see we show you what is total for the tax in the APP, and we also show you what is spent on the services. And if I go back to slide where agriculture production is on 49, you will see that the total for the tax is 888 million, and the total budget is indicated as 1.9, but also you will see 1 billion as a whole is going towards the service. So the bulk of the budget in this program goes to services, number one, two, and to the conditional grant. So if you, and ARC, once you've given away that, this branch deals mainly with the regulatory services. If you look at the slide on 50 on food security and agrarian reform, you will see that services is lower, but the bulk of the budget is going towards the development. I'm going to slide number 55, and that shows the forestry and natural resource management, and you will also see the split between the targets that are in the APP and the other services. And sometimes I know there have been questions, why have you spent the whole budget, but not necessarily on the APP. The budget is split between the APP, which is what you have here, and the services that is in the operational plan, and those are the maintenance services we are providing to the communities and the client on the whole. Slide 53, which is fisheries, you will see the split also between the targets, 432, in a budget of 458, because in this case we're largely providing funds for the staff, and of course a bit is allocated to the aquaculture, and of course some allocation that is done for vessels, but in the rest is being funded from their revenue that they generate in the marine living resources. And slide number 54, it will show you of the total budget of the 6.3 billion, 50% goes to the targets in the ADP, and the other 50% goes to the services. What you have in the, just the additional second, because I have this, I'm done with the presentation, but I thought I want to pick up just on a few things that would be of interest to you. The graduate program, we have a number of programs that we are implementing for the graduates. The one is where we place youth with the industry, we call it the young producers, it's an industry placement. We also are working in collaboration with the PPECB on agri-export technology services, where PPECB takes some young graduates, train them, and we would actually use some of this in our inspection services going forward. We also have a program, a professional development program, where we're funding researchers who have masters and PhDs. And then, of course, we have the normal internship program. What is new is the compulsory community services for vets, and what minister is under to project management and monitoring that would support not only CAF, but largely CAF. We will place graduates in the provinces who will strengthen our team, both during the planning and monitoring, to help us with verification, but also help us populate. One of the things that we're doing is to make sure that we keep our project register up to date, but we have also started now with a farmer register, and we will require the graduates who are in the provinces to make sure that this data is kept on the system that we're developing. So we believe this graduate program will become very, very useful, and we believe we will grow. At the moment, if we allocate 30 of them, and we believe we will grow this program in the coming year. Also, what is included in the pact that we just distributed now, I just make those comments, because it affects all the programs that are dealing with the smallholder farmers. DPSE has conducted evaluation on the following programs. The extension recovery program, the CASP, the impact has been, the study has been done. What remains is going back to cabinet with the improvement plan. Now, that improvement plan has been drafted, but it's not concluded, and DPMB has suggested that we wait until a few other studies are concluded. AFISA, also the impact evaluation has been done. What is happening also now is the smallholder evaluation, the diagnostic evaluation of the smallholder support program. And when all these are completed, the improvement plan and support for the smallholder farmers must take all this collectively into consideration. And for the same reason, we have to hold back on some of finalizing some of the policies. The mechanization support, which will now become a chapter, we are developing the comprehensive producer development support policy. And we're at a stage where we are engaging various departments. We have a first draft. We are also engaging industry. But when all that is done and the studies above, we believe we will have a comprehensive producer development support that will help us determine how do we support, how much do we give, how long do we give, but also ultimately it will guide the various departments, because at the moment there are a number of departments who are involved in agriculture, and you will find that different standards are being applied, and this policy will provide that guide. We do expect that later on we will get this policy or some elements of this policy legislated so that we can enforce consistent approach in providing development support. I think I'm going to stop here. I've listed also in one of the pages you have some of the private sector projects that we're discussing. And in the main, the private sector here requires our interventions in government, more than providing money, but mobilizing the farmers, removing certain blockages that may be there, whether it's access to land, whether it's the EIA, that we resolve those issues. We would link when some of these projects are ready, where financial support is required, we will link these projects to the smallholder farmers in those provinces where they are. We do indicate very clearly to them that whatever happens, we would want to make sure the smallholder farmers are benefiting. And we believe they are high-impact projects. If they are concluded, they would become very useful. I'll stop here, Chairperson, and wait for guidance. MLRF goes into the detail of what is in the APB here, and we put there. And then I have the CAP if you require me to do that.
Honorable Member, we allow you to present the CAP story. Yeah, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. If members have got that presentation, I will talk to both Haft and Ilma Lesima. And I will move to, I'll tell you the slide that I will talk to. The slide number 10, that's where the allocations are. What is different this year, and I want to talk to that, is the fact that there is an allocation of the 76 million that had to do with the outstanding flood. When there were floods previously in the various provinces, the allocation has been staggered. And in this current year, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Western Cape, and these are decisions that were taken some years back when the flood happened, that the fiscals would not be able to provide all the funds, and it will be programmed. And in this, we have done the Northern Cape and what comes in is Limpopo and Mpumalanga. Those are the floods that happened several years ago, and it was determined at that point that this would be allocated over time. But that's the total allocation of 1.6 that includes this disaster, flood disaster. And this is the Lizima, how it's broken down per province, 491. Now, we are bringing these, making sure that the CAF contributes to the revitalization of agriculture and agro-processing value chain. There are four or five elements there, and under the market access where we have the agri-parks, we do expect that the CAF allocations will play a role, and we're once indicated in the blue color where CAF will get involved. Under the producer support also of the revitalization, CASP and Ilimalisima would make that contribution. Under the technical support also of the producer support, CASP will also contribute in making sure that there is a support provided, and that would include, amongst other things, the provision of the graduates, the support to the colleges, and the training of staff. The production in the 1 million hectares will also be supported, and all of these are contributing to both APAP and the revitalization. The funds as proposed would be allocated firstly to the red meat value chains, and would see the breakdown per province. That's 339 million will go towards the red meat value chain. And that would, then there will, there's a small amount that goes to piggery, but also dairy. In terms of poultry, 146 million will go towards supporting the poultry value chain. And for the first time, very clearly, there is an allocation that will support aquaculture. 44 million will be used to support the agriculture in those projects that have been identified supporting the ocean's economy. And you will see the fish state where we have our partnership program with the Chinese. There's also Limpopo, and I think often there's been questions, are we doing anything about the facilities we have? Those would be supported to make sure that the farmers are supported. So there's 44 million in addition to our funds from CAF that will go towards the aquaculture. There's also a breakdown in terms of the hectares that will be supported under Fiscal, and part of the bridges that you need will be to make sure that the hectareage is monitored. This will be the hectares according to the commodities, and you'll see maize accounts for the bigger part of the targeted hectares. The grain production will take the bulk of that. Then the budget according to the various commodities, what has been planned by various commodities, and we were looking at the fruit, the grains, various other commodities. Then the support will go towards the irrigation schemes, and key would be the Fahab, which is big, and and you will also find that as we do this, both ourselves and rural development will be contributing towards the various components of that. The same is Makatini, we continue to do that, and Urban Haven. Then there are other deliverables, smallholder farmers that will be supported through CAF. Those will be supported through Ilimlizima. There will also be that the black commercial farmers will be supported through CAF and Ilimlizima, and the subsistence producers will be supported, and we expect 9,800 jobs to be created, and the training that will be provided to 22,000 firms, and support to the colleges, and the flood disaster that I showed, 26,000, will benefit the 1,800 farmers. And also included in this is the partnership with the PPECB to help the smallholder farmers come into the market readiness program through the SA Gap certification. Then, of course, we have the breakdown per province on slide number 23, both CASP and Ilima Lisima in terms of the three categories of farmers. And this is what we have. We're still cleaning up the individual project before we find the final implementation agreement, and we will probably by the time we present also show you the various partnerships that or implementing arrangements that are in place for CAPS that shows the collaboration with NAMA, collaboration with ARC, collaboration with PPECD, but also other implementing agents. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Honorable members, that's the presentation of the department. You're welcome to engage on it. Honorable Spain, DG, note questions and then we'll respond later. Honorable Paulson, will follow Honorable Steve.
Thank you, Chief Minister, for the presentation, and also thank you to the Minister for attending the meeting and giving us his plans for the year. Chair, I will just focus for now on that slide, I think slide 9, the one of the challenges, situation analysis, because I think, Chair, that is the important part of the discussion. Chairperson, again, as I mentioned earlier, I personally would have liked to see, you know, more focused on the drought-specific interventions. I think it's difficult if we just talk about the underutilized land, for instance, and we don't say, let's, you know, what happened this year, what was the impact, and do we then look at rather trying to see if we would move more land under irrigation and not focus so much, because, you know, sure, the drought has not really been broken. Our, you know, our dams and levels are there. Our certain provinces are still under drought as we speak. So, you know, what would specific focus be for areas? And then something that I think is important and that I'm not sure they understand, and I just wanted to have a look at it now, is the SPUMA Act, the Spatial Planning Land Use Management Act that was already promulgated a year or two ago. In the community that I work with, there's a lot of resistance at the moment by especially traditional leaders that don't want the SPUMA Act being implemented. Many of the municipalities are currently putting the SPUMA Act on the table and wants to start implementing it. So I want to ask the department and maybe the minister, what difference would the Land Use Management Act bring to the table that we couldn't cover in the SPUMA Act? And what would the linkage be between the two of them? Why can't we just start looking at the implementation of the SPUMA Act? Why must we bring another act, you know, that will take another 2, 3, maybe 4, 5 years until implementation done? And I will tell you why I'm saying this. I am extremely concerned about just using land left, right, and center. And I especially drive in the Eastern Cape rural communities a lot. And every time I go there, new houses are being built, and it's great to see development. But my concern is the way land are being used. We know this, the way the system works. No one checks what, you know, what is the best way and where is the best way to put development. So we all, you know, we can all focus on mining and big things, but houses are going up left, right and center in rural communities, and there is no way of trying to manage that at this moment. So I would like to know, what is the department's role, and are we working with municipalities on the SLUMA Act to try and make sure that currently we look at agricultural land? The next thing new to that is the status of Act 70. It's the division, what is it called, the long subdivision of agricultural land. What is the status of that currently? Because I still get many queries on the subdivision, and that people don't get it approved via the department on subdivision. So is it blocked? Is it going on? And again, maybe linked that to the SLUMA Act. And then, I'm happy to see in one of the slides on cost that there is something that says linked to yield or something. I can't remember the specific page now. But I actually wanted to say that when SSC was here earlier. The only way to look at contractors and subcontracting is to link that to yield. You understand when there are certain things. But I know that if you don't write that into the, I would almost say, agreement, you will never see an improvement. I don't care. As long as they're getting paid. And say, I would like to find out, I said last time, I know that in Limpopo, people were planting in January, February, even it didn't even rain. They still came and planted. I want to know if they were paid. There's a concern that people are just getting paid to do the job. They don't care what the circumstances are currently. So I would like to see, maybe in the last quarter report of the department, I want to see on contractors in COP and where contractors were used. Are they paid, and what is the outcome of that? They can't be paid if they know there would be no yield. Then humans and grain is...
Honourable Sten, can you mention which well in Limpopo?
Where in Limpopo? No, sir, but I will find out if you want me to mention
it. No, I'm saying so that they can be able to respond. There must be no way in Limpopo.
I want to know generally in Limpopo.
Because if you remember, there was a decision when they presented, they indicated that Limpopo in particular has taken a decision not to plant because of the doubt they are taking demand for the last stock. And this committee, we're querying that they've launched the drought resistance. It's not been utilized. People have taken decision not to plant. So I'm just, I wanted us to be consistent so that we're able to track. I'm not interfering that to disturb you, because I was just worried that similarly that there is that this information is not, I'm not sure what I'm saying. It's not, I will not say it's correct because you're given. But in this meeting, the report that we got was that Limpopo in particular, they've took a decision not to plow this year. And we, as this committee, were worried and say, how do you do that? How do you test? And Limpopo is one of the provinces that you have actually launched that resistant drought. So if you say you're not planting, what do you mean? So...
Okay, that's fine. Yes. I will get a specific area, but I also think it's important because when the first quarter comes back, I think it's one of the things that departments can maybe look at, whether they did plant in certain areas, and what was the result of that, and why did they then plant decisions. Because in Pompo's big, some areas might have had rain. I'm not saying they were not supposed to plant at all. My information was just that when they did plant, it was very late, and people at that stage already said there would be no harm, but people still continued. Then, Chair, the second one is the risk of this unsafe food and food import and readiness. I'm extremely concerned. Already people are asking us questions about the poultry imports. Do we have the capacity? And I know it's not only the department, it's also the thing of Department of Health. If someone again can explain to me what is the role of the department, especially now with the lots of imports that needs to come to the country on grain and whatever, what is the exact thing that needs to happen when the when the food comes into the country, who is responsible for what, and do we have the capacity for that? Because in the past there were certain concerns that we don't have the capacity to test food and food safety. So what specifically is the role of the Department of Agriculture in imports? And then what is the specific role there from the... I'm talking about until the food leaves the harbour. Or before, I don't know where it's tested and what is the story for that. Then, Chairperson, the plan regarding food safety. We are aware that SADC has now been declared a national drought or a disaster area, and that will impact around 50 million people. What is our arrangement and agreement with SADC region? My concern, my own concern, is that people in the rest of Africa and the southern and eastern African region might think South Africa is a place to come to if they run out of food. We already know that Zimbabwe, Lesotho, Swaziland, and neighboring countries have been declared. So, are we in discussions with them? Are we talking to them on how will we together as SADC countries handle this? Is there some kind of agreement on our... I know the Deputy Minister the other day mentioned something about that South Africa itself needs to import food, but we still have agreements on exporting food, and my understanding was that the export food would be to the SADC countries. So what is the discussions around that? Do we come to some kind of agreement or not on that? Then, Chairperson, something that I also can't get an answer to is we know that irrigation is always better. But when we had the presentation by the Department of Water and Sanitation, they said that already, I think, 33, 34 million people are at risk for water services now. We've received subsequently a long list with many, many, many communities and towns without water. What is our agreement with the Department of Water and Sanitation regarding irrigation? Because if the drought continues and people must start planting now, farmers asking constantly, at what point per dam will irrigation be cut? In many areas, irrigation is already cut under 50%. So if we sit with the food security crisis, we sit with people without water, and the only, or most of the food that's planted is under irrigation, and we cut irrigation also, it comes, you don't know where to stop and where to go. What is the discussions happening with the Department of Water and Sanitation? So, I'm not saying we must stop minerals, but at least minerals is something that we don't eat and live off. But minerals is before food in our water plan. Is there some kind of a discussion happening surrounding that? But at least we need to look at feeding people first before we continue with exporting diamonds and things like that. So I want to know what the discussions are. Do we have that kind of discussion? So my other concern is around the market access. What is the link to that with AgriParks? Is that the sole role of AgriParks to provide market access to especially smallholder farmers? Or what is the... I still don't understand what the AgriPark concept is supposed to be achieving. Because that is the sole role, but let me just find out what is the idea of the AgriPark. In disaster management, I saw that slide. I'll stop.
Thank you, Jefferson, and thank you, Minister, and thank you, Minister and DG. Minister, up front, you expressed some very noble intentions, producing and training new farmers, ensuring that coastal communities are able to have a livelihood from the ocean. I like those lofty goals.
available. But when it comes to the ocean economy, you have these large multinationals who have monopolized, the DG mentioned about something to the effect illegal poaching, and I think that is a problem. You know, if we are saying that we would like to empower coastal communities, and we also accuse them of poaching, and we allow large multinational companies to drain our ocean resources, there's a conflict there. I think we're going to suffer that headache again, where allocations will be very little allocations going to fishing communities along the coast, and the multinationals will once again, how are we going to reverse that to allow South Africans to enjoy that abundant ocean wealth that is being almost completely depleted? It was Easter now. I was thinking for hike, 7 grand a kilo, and it belongs to me. I'm paying someone to go and take that fish out of my sea. Okay, and then when it comes to small-scale farming, Minister, you and I have spoken about this. In the Western Cape, there's no land allocated for small-scale farmers. These farmers that are farming the Western Cape, they've been farming for generations. It's a closed market. And just about less than 50 kilometers from here, the one area where you have small-scale farming within the city, it's probably, which makes Cape Town very unique, the Philippi horticultural area, which is an aquifer actually. It has subterranean water that allows them to not be as dependent, or they're not as badly, or they're not even affected by the drought because of the subterranean water table. And what is happening now is that the city and the Western government are rezoning the Philippi horticultural area for mixed-use development. So what will happen is, slowly but surely, the Philippi horticultural area will no longer be a place where food is grown in the city. 150,000 tons of food are produced annually in the city, with in close proximity to the people that will consume it. And it is now under threat. I'm thinking to myself, we've done nothing. There are a few people fighting to stop the Western Cape government and the city of Cape Town from destroying this very, very valuable area. And I also find there's a... The DG mentioned we are going to produce more farmers to enter the market and produce, but there's a problem with markets. So we need to, and the DG said it will be addressed over time. I think, you know, when it comes to addressing a serious problem, people, that would be the livelihood, the farming, and they won't have access to markets. We need to really show some commitment. We need to set clear goals, make targets when these things will be in place. I think that about covers it. Let me just... Okay, and then the agriculture bill, and I remember last year on oversight we went to the Eastern Cape, and the aquaculture project we saw there, I mean, even if I said they were disastrous, it would still say that there's actually something there. There was nothing there. They weren't, except for the one that was in the harbor, but the other one that we went to, it was nothing. They were holding the ground. Those were supposed to be, I don't know, hatcheries, whatever. But there is, and they were always non-existent. So when you're saying we're allocating $44 million to aquaculture, is this $4 million a determination as to what is required to actually make these viable projects, or is that what we're allocating and we're going to have to distribute it among however many aquaculture projects there are? Because I think it's essential. I mean, we do realize, we acknowledge the marine resources are becoming lesser and lesser, and we have to look for other ways, and we know that in South Africa, less than 1% of the fish we consume comes from aquaculture, as opposed to the rest of the world where 50% of the fish they consume comes from aquaculture. So there is a huge potential for growth, and there's huge potential when it comes to agriculture and fisheries. It's huge potential to absorb labor. So is $44 million really justifying the solution that this presents to us? Surely we are not doing it just to have projects that are. We need to have projects that are really viable, that will absorb labor, that will create, that will provide that loss in the marine economy. So I think we need to be very certain that we're not just making money available and hoping that it will make a dent in the big problem that exists, but it must be an amount determined as to that we've determined would provide a solution to the problem. I think Jefferson, And then the under Program 3, we mentioned supporting 80,000 smallholder producers. Now, I know 80,000 smallholder producers. There are no smallholder farmers in the Western Cape, of my province, where I come from. They're not going to benefit under Program 3. What are we doing to solve the problem? What are we doing, speaking to Western Cape government? Okay, look, 1994 has come and gone, but we need to really now change the patterns of ownership, of land ownership, provide access to agriculture activities. Not train someone to go and work on someone else's farm, but train someone to own a farm. Change the patterns of ownership where blacks can actually feel that, hey, Western Cape is part of the great South Africa. You know, when I go to the rest of the country, I mean, I travel a lot outside of the Western Cape. It's like a fun country for me, because see black people farming, owning a farm, right? That's the Western Cape. I'm in Europe now, I'm a black man, yeah. I mean, if I work on a farm, it's not going to be my own, because you're selling us out, you're not providing us ownership of farms, understand? What are you doing to reverse that? Thank you very much, Chairperson. Are you part of this meeting? That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. As you know, I don't have many questions, a long one. I'll leave other questions to my own Pata Makreko and Chief Mandela. Other questions. I've got only two questions here. You talk of the commerce and the community services on the part of these beds working in the rural area. I just want to check now, if don't you ever consider giving the rural allowance as it is the case in education, where teachers are working in the remote areas, so they are given some allowance so as to motivate them. Then question number two, You know, there are these big forest tires, Sapi and this other one. They usually go to traditional leaders and communities and ask for land to plant trees. I want to check now, is there any monitoring that is being done by the department to check if what is this is actually doing? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also echo the sentiments of welcoming the presentation by the department, and also thank the Minister for his input. It has somewhat enlightened some of us. But I can assure you, Honorable Minister, that we are not selling us out. But that shouldn't worry you, because Madiba was also said to be a sellout. In trying to gain an understanding on the targets we set, Honorable Minister, I want to first and understand, are we meeting these targets? Or is it figures that are put out? I think I was interested in the presentation from the FSC of the declaration by the NDP that we are looking to ensure that we create about 1 million jobs by 2020. Are you meeting that target? Because that is influenced by what you are setting in each fiscal. So I'm interested in this fifth parliament. What have you accomplished in your target of 2014-2015, 2015-2016? Because then that gives us an indication if you are really going to meet the envisioned target of the NDP or we're falling short. I'm also concerned on the hectares that we put out, 80,000 hectares to be utilized, but you also have to benchmark that against the total target for this parliament. Are we scratching the surface, or are we actually meeting the target? Are we going to get there where we are looking to go? Because if, for example, you've got 1 million hectares you want to get to, and you are in two fiscals still sitting at 60,000, how are you really going to get to that? And, I have also looked in the past in your commitments on, for example, in forestry. In the Eastern Cape, you are targeted to deliver 100,000 hectares, and in KwaZulu-Natal, 89,000 hectares. Have we achieved that as we are now going to another fiscal and putting another commitment? We need to be able to assess that and benchmark it to the entire MTAF. How are we going to fare? Are we going to really meet these targets that we are looking at? And I'd like to get a broader understanding without just looking at 2015-2016. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. First, let me also thank the department and the minister, also, and also come immediately to the minister and find out if he would need any assistance or involvement of the, maybe, because it's just a heap of the committee when you interact with the rural development and then recall these issues. And then I come to that underutilized land in the rural areas. I think somewhere it was referred to as in the homeland. I think the comrades of the minister would be angry and think of nostalgic to going back to Mazama when you refer to it as homeland. But we know what it is meant to understand the essence of the of the thing. But now, my worry is that could we really understand
what is the actual cause of this underutilization of this land. We may get several stories. In one situation myself, I asked people, why are they not using their land? And they said, because they don't have livestock to cultivate. In the next meeting, I asked again, why did you? They said, no, this land is not fenced, and the livestock is eating our products. When I said, I'll go to the department and report that you say your livestock is eating your maize, therefore you have. They said, no, not that way. So, maybe we need to understand exactly what is the cause. Is it in the mentality of the people, or is it only the resources, or is it combined? Because I don't think it's something that cannot be identified and be attended to. It is one of these unidentified land, unused land, if we say it is not utilized at all. And the last one is on the control of the diseases. In many countries, people want to control diseases so that they want to make sure that nothing comes into the country. I don't know that we do have such laws and if implementing them effectively. Because one thing I can guarantee in this department is the capacity. Maybe you can have a problem with inability to perform, but with the capacity, I can assure you that I don't think there's any skill that is not in this department, whether it's a doctor, economist, financier, social worker, everybody is in this department. So the capacity is that the certain resources and human resource and technology. So I'm not sure whether we actually use all these resources to make sure that we don't become victims. I think I once had an argument that swine fever was not in South Africa until the First World War, when it is assumed that some soldiers came eating this pork in the country. And therefore it means something can come into our country well or not away. Thank you, sir.
One of the sectors of that that constantly lags behind, as seen out of the presentations that is made here from time to time regularly, is the forestry sector. Last year, funds, and I'm not sure how much of it, was diverted to the international forestry conference we had in our country, in Durban. And what I would like to know is, what effect did that have on the rollout of the projects under Program 5? And how are we going to play catch up? Does it mean that there will be a redetermination of targets in the forestry section? The second question with regard to forestry is that 61% of the forestry budget goes to forestry operations. Can you please explain what activities happen under that forestry operation? Then I would like to know what is happening with NEHA. How far is the implementation of the recommendation that NEHA should be deregistered? Coming to the target of bringing 1 million hectares of fallow land into production, it seems as though, looking at what has happened up to now, it seems as though it's not going to happen. I would like to know where you are going to adjust the target. And if not, what are you going to do to get, do you have a special plan to get to the 1 million hectares by 2019? Thank you.
Thank you, Shana. again, let me thank the minister for his input on the political overview of the department, because it has understanding the department from a political point of view and combine that with administration. But I also like what the minister said, that there has been a meeting between him and the department led by Minister Nkwint, so that we can deal with these issues of overlap, particularly on what we do as the two departments. And reading the FFC recommendations, I think there is some area that is captured there. Thanks for that, Minister. But I think we need to see results, because it's we're going for the finish of the second year, isn't it, in this fit parliament. And if in the last 3 years, and if there's no clarity on what one does in terms of the department, I think there will be trouble as agriculture, because a lot is done by rural development that is supposed to be done by staff. Well, it's on government, but I think the roles must be very clear. You mentioned the issue that was raised of ensuring that as we produce food, there must be storage, because if there is none, and then there will be a problem, and you indicated, I'm not sure if you are saying who is trying to help in that regard. So for me, that's quite important, because one of the provinces is said to be a province where you can, where we produce a lot. And it's the province of Honorable Ntaifa. So I'm saying that's quite important. Secondly, Honorable Youngblood did deal with the issue of forests, and I want to come in on the question of employment in that area, because somewhere he talked about a number of jobs created or to be created a year. And then I think it's then through the refurbishment of category B and C plantations, and that is under EPWP, and it gives us a figure of 2.4. But that's one issue. The general issue is the question of correctness in terms of total figures of employment, so that we are not challenged. Figures that we reflect in our documents must be figures that are well accepted generally. Now, the Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries is handling funds, not necessarily handling grants to provinces, and the problem there is, how do we verify what provinces are doing to have that capacity of verifying what provinces are doing on what we've given them, because it's not used by us, but we're accountable for it, isn't it? It's money that is is from this department and is given to them, now it's used on all manner of issues apart from what the province is given for doing other things. Do we have the capacity of verifying that so that there is something that we can say out of that? Somewhere there is and maybe the department will have to, as the last point, under wild transfers and grants and all that. It says the Comprehensive Agricultural Support was bundled out in the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program grant has been decreased by 150 million over the medium term to meet government's immediate national priorities. The grant will fund less infrastructure as a result of the decrease. Then it continues to say 60 million of the grant that would usually go to provinces will be retained in the National Department for Monitoring and Evaluation of Provinces' Use of the Grant. I was asking a question earlier, now I'm reading this. Use of the grant over the medium term, including projects, project plans, and grant indicators, and project reports. The issue is that 60 million, and all of that. If we can gain clarity on that. Thank you very much.
Let me allow you to answer this question, a lot of them. And then we'll then break for lunch, we'll come back and give members again questions to give members again chance to ask questions. So Minister, I can see you want to respond only.
On time, because I may not be with you after lunch.
Okay.
So I wanted to deal with you. I know there are a couple of people who can give answers to some of the technical questions. Dealing with the issue of Loma and all other things, yesterday the Minister of Land Reform gave a comprehensive report on the Act on Land Use. As you are aware that the department has been is now not launching this program of one family, one hectare, because of the problems that are entailed in the trust and CPAs. The aim is to circumvent that because there has been a delay in making sure that work happens. And I hope that maybe there may be a need where the committee is briefed by both the Department of Agriculture and that of land reform. And because for us to succeed, you need a buy-in of this. Whether you don't believe in the system or not, they remain a formidable force that is there. But some who agree now, some of the programs, I won't mention provinces, are also self-inhibiting, such that the land is allocated in a trust under a kingdom or chieftainship that makes it difficult for its usage going forward. But I think that before maybe we ensure that program would be able to explain, because there are two processes. The land that was allocated to families as a group, it was either put under trust or CPAs. And those CPAs at the end acted as laws unto themselves, not answerable to communities. And some of the land has been either leased back to those from our farmers or has been sold. So this kind of act now is trying to change that, so that you allocate this land or this hectare on individual families who comprise that grouping that got land. And I think the program that has been embarked upon is quite successful because it is implemented by commercial formations like Grain South Africa. So that's one of the things I thought I should. A food impost that has been raised by another thing, and drought. We, as a department in dealing with drought, we have been involving as a commercial farmer, because we believe that, and both commercial and small scale formations, so that we appreciate and understand what is at stake. There is a program that the department will have to work with that is to look at importation of cropgrains. Let me rush to make this point. It is not because of drought that we're importing more. For instance, as this country, we have been importing half of what we consume in wheat. That is an economic sector that is not informed by drought. And we have been importing more of our soybeans since before the drought came, hence the high input cost into your poultry and any other feed. But the fact is that the drought is there. But according to the studies that have been done by the science researchers or the South African Weather Service, this drought is supposed to come to an end in some of the areas by June, July, as we have seen floods. But the issue therefore is twofold. And this remains the same. How do we improve the capacity of our dams as well as other homes to deal with water harvesting? So that we look at the issues we are raising, including the issue of how do you ensure that the allocation of water for agriculture, for forestry, as well as for mining, and also for human consumption. Those are things I think the two departments have to deal with, and I think that the IMC in its next meeting will have to look at those things, so that we come with a program that makes sure that, and by the way, we need to decide whether we want to use more water in the sugar cane. Is that because of me not liking sugar? But it is a reality that only 40% of our main production is under irrigation, and 50% is under dry land, and that exposes us then when there is this drought. These things like the Josina Dam, if they are used to grow maize production, by the way, I'm having an upcoming meeting with the main farmer in that area, who's willing to convert into maize production into more only sugar. Honorable Paulson, in my opening statement, I alluded to all the issues we have raised. Not all, but some of them. The challenge of this province in terms of allocating of land for small-scale farmers. I agree with you, I've been traveling in this province. Where there is some small-scale farming happening, the land is not marketed for agriculture. And therefore, when there is to be an application for it to be subdivided, it exposes our small-scale farmers. And there's been this uncertainty as to, and I think the government will have to do a study as to how to make sure that the funds we focus for Illimani Sema, for instance, the 65 or 63 million, just reaches those people it is intended to reach. And I think that's something I think we will have to deal with and come back and give explanation. The small scale market assets has been raised by many honorable members. But the point there is that the an agreement that the government should have a 30% outtake to make sure that when you produce maybe a particular product, the state will be the buyer. It's what the Brazilians have done. Will you guarantee that if you, for instance, we do have MOUs with China on maize and apples, won't we target in doing that? To make sure that when you produce maize or you produce apples, you know very well that as part of that output, it will be put back again without infrastructure. And I was going to say that we're debating about capacitating our city level, which is supposed to deal with infrastructure development. That entails into road infrastructure in the farms, that entails into feedlots into communal areas, because what has made it, you can tell farmers to sell their cattle. If you tell them during droughts, you are selling them, must give them away, because farmers go when they know that those cattle are only in that they had to walk. And they buy them within 4 months, that cow or cattle put into a feedlot with the fat left in, and when you sell it, you make money. We're in a program of educating our farmers to say that the capacity of a society must be determined. someone says, we don't keep, you don't keep 10,000 cattle in an area that is fit for 40. Those are kind of these individuals who are engaging on. So that people don't care, keep individually the breed and all those things is what we're dealing with. And on the stock market, I agree that we need to make sure that we target our market. Mandela is not in, but some of the questions I'm sure that we will answer on how do we make sure that our targets reflect what is achieved. What we do, like the Israeli range, I agree with, is that we need to make sure we have already applied to the Department of Treasury to try to make sure that we change the level of allocation so that we can have a stringent rule that says if a province has planned to plant 400 hectares, before planting happens, we are able to monitor and see if they intend to do so. And if not, we may be able to say that we retain the funds until we are given proper answers, so that we can be able to. And again, sometimes we don't tell stories of what has been done, which is successful. If you go to the area of in the city, around Lamba, where there was a huge state-of-the-art mill. That mill will be used this year because they planned to harvest their first harvest in a joint venture between our department and the private entity that has planted maize. Maybe when we count the hectareage of what we have done, we only focus on the provinces came to have done. We don't check in terms of our partnership with private companies. But, and I'm sure if you can do that, the numbers we give will be more. You go to Tanzania, because I'm not here, but Tanzania consistently is producing meat and in good quality. But it is the system we use that limits us to say we budgeted for 80. Therefore, if the province didn't produce 80, we're not able to quantify that which is done through our own participation as a department. And I'm sure the department will look around those things. But if we don't link this projection to what we intend doing with ACRI-ACT, where we speak of ACRI-ACT's value chain, where we believe that a town like Badawa, which used to be the hub of development in the former Eastern Cape government, that is what is, which is intended to be that kind of aquaculture and agri-park area. How does our production therefore fit into there? And how do we quantify the fact that now farmers will not only plant maize and sit back, but will also participate in the value chain going forward? Those are the things I think we need when we have met with the Department of Land Reform, were able to reformulate the way we will report. Let me agree with Al-Kapa, it's true. I know not that I'm told. I don't use research. I try to plant in my village. You plant and they ask you, will you look after your maize? And it's not something that, it shows the culture change. That where people use to even to determine where cattle are grazing, and even determine the grazing process until you harvest, is no longer the case now. So fencing is key. Let me say, there is really now an interest in our local people into agriculture. Last week, Friday, I was addressing a meeting of chiefs, and I found that what they are coming for is to associate. Assistance is in form of, and in some of the provinces, participation not only in terms of government putting funds. They have been groomed to think that when you put 1.8 for as a participant, government must come with other things. We need therefore to find partnership in terms of issues like engaging another brand like Omnia to partner with us, so that when you reduce the cost of doing agriculture. So I can tell you this, that even the chiefs I have met with, they are now agreeing that agriculture is the way to go, to lose the youth from other social activities and get them into working. So fencing is part. So is the building of teaching banks to deal with the issue of diseases and pests, diseases in animals. Let me say that as a department, I can be not getting about any foodstuff coming to the country and not going through the stringent phytosanitary processes. But for the best, since the president of the OIE is from our own department, that reflects the capacity we have. And we spend more time in doing that work. So that when, and I agree with you, if there could have been a this swine flu some time ago, some of these diseases are airborne diseases that we cannot control, like the diseases of pets. But some of them are carried, and I think that we need to ensure that, therefore, we strengthen in that area. What happens in Naha? Man, I think we are still waiting for the letter from the Department of Finance. And I'm sure the acting DG will give us broader explanation. But as a department, we are committed to ensure that the decision of the decision of the study group is really realized and carried on. And we're able to make sure that we are achieving the goal that was set to achieve. The multinationals and how they monopolize. Let me agree with you, because it's not only monopolization by multinationals, but it's the nature of fishing that is involved. If you are involved in deep egg fishing, you can use a small boat to go there. So access to some of the infrastructure is an inhibiting factor. But we have tried our best, hence we have geared Honorable Holson, the backlog of appeals. Our aim is to ensure that at least the process is transparent, everybody participates, yes, challenges will be there. But in the long run, I hope the department will not only look at affordability, because one of the issues we need to improve is how to make sure that fishing villages, fishing communities also have got the processing of that fish. It means the time to fish in Mossel Bay, but that fish is processed in Cape Town. Because in doing that, they're transporting jobs to Cape Town, denying the people of that area the benefit of the pollution of that fish. So we're seeing the things that women were engaging on. But we need to make sure that in all these areas, we improve our ability to monitor. So that if you plan to plant fruit trees, but you don't do it, that we're able to catch up because we're monitoring what you are doing. Those are things I think that the department we're working on. And I can try to assure you that what about to sell out people. If there's a struggle to access land in the Western Cape, we need to deal with the Department of Land Reform and see if we cannot focus on buying commercial farming so that we can have land. But in terms of their land acquisition, I think that in the Western Cape, it is twofold. And according to the same case, the land belongs to public works and municipalities. So instead of getting that tomorrow again, we come and say that the land tomorrow is declared. It's a process that we need all of us to take. It's not an area that we can go up tomorrow and become surveyors by saying, I saw in Padawas, people waking up in the morning, undermining the local authorities to demarcate land for housing. And that process can end up without people having land for grazing. You need to balance the use of grazing land as well as housing. If you only deal with housing as a project, it would have housing but it would be hungry. Then I think the government can answer that.
Mr. Manya is remaining with us, will remain to answer, so that I allow. If none of the follow-up questions to Minister, before you get released, from me, Minister, the allocation, water allocation, to agriculture. Water affairs indicated that already you use 60% of water to fuel white male farmers. They've allocated, they've got allocation of that water. So, as a way of transforming the sector itself, how do we make sure that 60%, well, Department of Water Affairs, they indicated they are not going to give you any extra. You have already 60%.
how do you use the 60 to bring the new ones on board, share the water of the new smallholder farmers that are coming in, that you are putting irrigation and other things? Second thing, Minister, is the I'm trying to choose yours from those that need police. President Sona, President indicated that we must we are going to go on the reduction of wasteful expenditure and containment measures that we will create. And Treasury, for that matter, issued a prescript note which says officials that travel to Parliament must be only three. So, unless if it was pre-approval. So, I just want to check, because we have a trail here, Minister. What's happening with the prescript? So if I can get that, so that if it was a pre-approval, it's fine, so that we establish that we know about this prescript and we want you to follow it, so that it doesn't be used against government tomorrow, because you should be able to lead in that one. The last one for you, Minister, is the policy. This thing about, as you come up with the strategy or policy on adaptation mitigation, but the challenge has been the response. Like now, DG has announced the 78 million that are supposed to go to province, which for the other year, the flood that happened that other year, it's now that government is responding. My question is, do we have because agriculture is not, it's not like any other sector. With roads, at least you can use a grader to grade until you put the tight road. But with agriculture, if the flood takes all the crops, then the farmer is lost. If now that you are going to respond, where is that farmer? Where are you going to get it? Or him? Do we have any, or are we intending to develop any policy or, I'm not sure, norms and standards which will negotiate with Treasury in terms of response with agriculture? Because agriculture cannot be treated with every, like any other department. So those are the three questions that I have for you, Minister. Is there a follow-up? Okay. Another thing?
Yes, thank you, Chair. That was my last of my next question when you stopped me on the question, but directly linked to this thing of disasters. Yesterday I was phoned by someone in a Bobo again, Chair, on the hail. Remember there was that hailstorm that wiped out almost all the mangoes and arrows and what, and apparently already the disaster request was put in November. I have the details here. But there is nothing back. It's months now, and apparently some of that farmers are on the brink of having to let go 450 or 500 workers. But they hear nothing back from the department, and it's exactly that thing. If there's a disaster that, affects people, it takes years and years and months, and nothing happens. So if we can get a response on disaster, and maybe, Minister, while you're on it, how far is your department on a drought disaster plan? Because I got an answer written saying today it's in a draft form, but I haven't seen the draft. We haven't seen it. We don't know what is happening.
Monday is just a rarity, just to get before the minister leaves. Can it be true that in the Western Cape we do not have small scale farmers? I'm just seeing this because I don't want that to be said or to plan, not knowing what we are planning for. Are the wine producers all large scale farmers? I think I have seen some even small piggeries around here. Because if we are not getting them properly, we won't be able to blend properly. effect.
And just to add the question, and why do they get the conditional grant? If they have, it's fine. But if they don't have, why do they get conditional grant if they don't have smallholder farmers?
Let me start with the chapter in answering. I said when I quote this, I said it's something we need to verify. Let me rush to say, according to the statement that we have been receiving from this, a week ago we had a meeting of all the trusts, all the trusts, will trust and all those. And last year when we met, a year ago, when we met at the Durham, the MEC of Agriculture in this province admitted the fact that small-scale farmers constitute 1% of farming in the Western Cape. It is all true because in the Western Cape, I repeat, there is no land under the Ministry of Agriculture or Land Reform. The land belongs to public works, if not municipalities. We create the sense of unpredictability because when you farm there, you farm at the behest of those two departments. And in Philippi, those farmers who have been there producing and in the rate that we record that they are successful may meant to be there by the end of the year, because when they do subdivision of land, we don't apply to the department because that land does not belong to us. So but what I said is that we need to do and verify that through a process that to come up with this handbook. So we need to do that. And hence the question from the chairperson as to, if that is the case, where does the funding go to? Yes, there are small scale people in the mining industry. There are more, but it is the issue of saying that when they do that work, there is no guarantee that it will be. For instance, if you go to other provinces, you find land either allocated to chiefs or to families. I'm sure it doesn't matter, but each family has got a 6-hectare plot that belongs to a family that can use it and account for it. But it's not here. In Limpopo, that land may belong to chiefs and other formations. But our government has to go and do a thorough work of paying. For instance, when we allocated this funding, 20% funding for drought alleviation, we did that for all provinces. The question therefore is, but there has not been an account, and unless I'm not aware, but in the last meeting of the MSCs, there was no report from the Western Cape to who are the beneficiaries of that allocation. When other provinces, you find that so many dams are planned, so many boreholes are drilled. And the point is that we need to clarify that before it is an effect. But there is an appeal view that says, we need to do something about that. The question of water use licensing. This is an old problem that I think as the new administration we didn't do deal with. When a farm sells a farm, he does not sell the license to the dam. He may keep the water licensing and use it in whatever form, depriving the new occupant of that farm of the right to use that water. It is something that the water department, because they eat water licensing, working with us, have to deal with. It is something that what is working on, is that when you buy a farm out from me, and I've got a water use license, I will sell you the land, but not the water use license. So that when you get that farm, you may be compelled to lease from me. So I don't like you, I may lease it from somebody else, and let your maids to die, because there have been two processes. This thing of interdepartmental processes, one that it is not a kind of controlled water allocation. Another department. So I think it's something that what is working on, and I'm sure we'll report as to what progress are we making in that. This matter was reported yesterday at the cabinet meeting. As I understand, this limit is based on traveling internationally. The policy says that if I'm traveling as a minister, I can only have 2 support staff. But the technical team is different.
because it's like when you are in the Department of Health, technical issues can't be dealt with you as a person. So the current police or policies that allow that people may suffer. If, for instance, if I were to say limit to two, it may be me, the acting DG, and one person. And when questions are raised specific to particular departments, we are not in a position to answer. You will say, we will go back and interact. That policy is specific to international travel. When ministers in the past, I'm told, I don't know, would carry five support staff people. It is limited now to two, unless you have done a prior arrangement, if you need more than that two.
The number of employees traveling to Parliament on official duty for the same matter is limited to three. That means so I'm just saying that it's an official document. If ministers are challenging it, take it back to cabinet and deal with it so that we must make you to account. In the near meeting, if you don't deal with the things, we'll not allow them to enter the room because Tela will want to be follow the latest police. So can we agree that minister, if there is a problem with this one, take it back to your cabinet and in the next meeting we'll get a feedback.
Raider, I hear, and I'm sure it's not Mr. who would have done it. I'm just saying, the reason I brought all the program managers, that was the understanding at the previous meeting. The chair was very clear, bring only the program manager, leave everybody behind. Now, I have all the program managers. The few people who are not program managers would be from planning only, and that's one person. The rest of the people are fishery people who are here in Cape Town. But also you will remember that we have stations here. For instance, Dr. Yafta has a Stellenbosch station. So when they're here, we would rather keep them here because they were anyway coming for the other business here and use them once they are here. So I'm just saying, perhaps minister has not necessarily been involved in making this choice of bringing people here. But if that would be the decision of the council, I'm following the previous decision, in the future we would indeed comply in that way. But I was just keeping minister as I was directed by the committee previously.
No, Dr. Mania, we said the program manager, yes, but there is this document that you are seated with, so, which is addressed to you. Maybe minister might not even know about it. I expect you to know about it. So all the accounting officers of the department. So it talks about three officials to Parliament. I know that Treasury usually does their out of their effective, of course, next. They'll then develop something that might be very difficult to work on. But as this committee, we are clear oversight. So we cannot ignore this letter. So you go back to cabinet and then deal with this issue and correct it. Because I suppose DG, what I meant, I know about it. Unless it's any time by Skull Human, acting accountant general. So it's with all the departments. I don't know why they didn't receive it, but it's here in Parliament. For us to monitor that process. So I'm raising it that it must be clear so that tomorrow we are not part of that of you increasing the fruitless expenditure.
Wasteful expenditure. Yes. Yes. Okay. No. Then if you have got a problem, go and raise it and it be corrected. Because if it's around here, still they're having the same thing. It's a problem. Alright. Oh, okay. So at least now I'm clearing my instructions so that you don't say, no, chair, if you said I must bring all this, all the all the property managers. So now thank you very much, Mr. You are not. Thank you for availing yourself.
I'm still with some few questions.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. The one I was responding to what the cabinet is having in terms of the number of people in terms of international travel. I understand this one applies to local travel and perhaps to DTGs. But on the issue of policy on drought mitigation and adaptation, remember, some of these instruments are informed by COP21, which comes under the law of international affairs, and the funding globally will be through that department. We have met as the acting DG has said, there are programs that will be driven through, because we deal with this, we only deal with changing the form of agriculture. You deal even with the eradication of invasive plants, which forms the problem of changing the habitat in terms of what happened broadly. So there is a program that I think in the next meeting, the department will give a feedback on what's happening. What we have done, I hope the DG will also expand, is to try to augment the team in the Department of Forestry. We have somebody who is a leader, who is focused in the area of disasters, in the area of drought management, because before that there was none. If you take the DG away from his work and he focuses here, that there somewhere else. But we agree that we need to focus on the issue of the Limpopo situation. I'm sure we'll take up that and we can maybe look at as a way how we respond. Remember, the Department of Finance and the Minister at this interim budget made the point that there will be a 1 billion rand set aside to assist. It is to deal with drought, but I'm sure we need to look at, because we were made aware that after this drought, there will come some of the hailstorms and other destructive forms that I think we need to look at those. And I'm sure if there have been weaknesses, because I don't think there's something wrong in engaging the Department of Treasury if there are such things. But let me say again, when you look at the allocation, which was the question that was raised on the allocation on aquaculture, some of the aquaculture projects are being funded by IDC, and the other money doesn't fit with our department. For instance, only 12 aquaculture projects, there is 28 million rand that has been allocated. Because aquaculture was driven by the Operation Pagisa, was under here, and the funds are with here. So those funds are there and they've been accounted for. And to rush to honorable also, I'm not sure which project that was visited, but Hamburg in the Eastern Cape had its first harvest in November of cod fish, and that fish was sold to what was processed in East London and sold to what they call to a production in the Western Cape. So it's already in production. So if you can give us the name of that place, we can go back and verify if the situation as you described. Thank you.
On the issue of the hail, I just want to make you aware the legislation that is controlled by COP has certain prescriptions that we have to work within those, and we will see how we will continue to negotiate. But also, as we are developing the integrated development finance, one of the things that we're looking at there is bringing in the insurance over time, because these problems will have an ongoing basis. That's one of the things I just wanted to. The rest, I'm sure we will respond when we come back.
Okay.
you're complying. I get